This is the Dr. Chris Lib Podcast. Welcome to a special mini-series called Bone Saws Bring It Back, Faculty Edition. The University of Alberta Medical Class of 2013, the Bone Saws, had their 10-year class reunion in November 2023. I invited faculty leaders and block coordinators to share their updates and reflections with their class. These interviews were recorded in November 2023 and are being released now in 2024. Dr. Peter Hamilton is a professor at the University of Alberta and general internist who practiced at the University of Alberta Hospital until his retirement in 2023. He had multiple roles for the Faculty of Medicine and Dentistry. For 10 years, he was the Residency Training Director for Internal Medicine. He subsequently became the Assistant Postgraduate Dean, Director of the Integrated Community Clerkship Program, Assistant Dean, MD Academics, and Divisional Director and Zone Lead for General Internal Medicine. Welcome to another special episode of Bone Saws Bring It Back, Faculty Edition. And today we've got Dr. Peter Hamilton. How's it going today, Dr. Hamilton?
I'm doing very well, Chris, and thank you very much for this invitation. It's delightful to see you again after all these years.
Indeed. So happy to be able to chat with you. So why don't you start us off by telling us how your career has gone since 2013?
Well, I jumped directly from ICC to becoming the Assistant Undergraduate Dean, which was one of the most challenging jobs I ever had, because I was responsible for dealing with the students that were having difficulty, and some of them we had a bit of a challenge with, but it was a very, very rewarding job to do, and I enjoyed working in the Dean's office. I then left that and I started our outpatient hypertension clinic working with a pharmacist in collaboration, which was very effective. I then learned how to do DL. In fact, I've been doing DL every year now. In fact, most of the first year DL sessions, including endo, pulmonary and renal, and it's been a lot of fun. I've really had a very engaging time working with the students. Although during COVID, we had to do it via Zoom. And actually, I quite enjoyed that. I thought it was quite an effective way to teach. Then we upgraded drugs and drugs. You remember this little book, I think. We developed it because we thought students didn't know anything about drugs, and I was quite embarrassed by that fact. So we wrote this book, and then we've actually, with some help from my colleagues, we now have an app, and you can download the app for free. It's been downloaded in over 100 countries and over 100,000 downloads, which is quite remarkable. And the whole goal of it is to have a safe prescribing of drugs. I then became the Divisional Director of General Internal Medicine for a while, and then I recently retired in July of this year. So I'm now retired, although I still have my license and I could still practice office medicine, but I haven't taken it up as yet. So that's my current status. I'm still doing discovery learning. I'm still been doing some work with ICC, and I've been recruited to help with foreign trained doctors that are trying to get up to speed with their knowledge. So hopefully I'll continue to participate, especially in medical education.
Well, that's great. And you're a person who I know has taken on so many roles and with your breadth of experience. And so for this next question, I'd be curious to hear, what would you say is the state of medicine / healthcare?
Well, first of all, I'm very encouraged. I don't think that we should always be doom and gloom. And we, you know, we've got fantastic medical students. You know, when I was in hospital recently, and this young guy came to look at me, and he says to me, "Oh, here's the emerge doc." He says, "Oh, Dr. Allen, you remember me? You taught me." I thought, "Oh, my Lord, isn't that awesome?" This goes to show how important medical education actually is, because we're teaching tomorrow's doctors. So now, I've worked with some amazing young physicians and students and residents like yourself and amazing nursing staff. So I believe that we've got amazing people in the system, and that's what holds it together. The acute care system is doing pretty good. I think for the most part, if you've got a serious acute illness, you will get excellent care in our hospital system. The problem really is aspects of chronic care, including hip replacement, joint replacement, cataract, and of course that big void, which is primary care, which I think is improving, but we've got a lot of work to do in enabling people to get expedited access to a family physician or somebody that can at least address their initial concerns. I think we have to look at a collaborative model with nurse practitioners and other care providers, and maybe a whole new paradigm of caregivers like ENTs. Why couldn't we have an EMT equivalent doing basic care under the supervision of a family physician? So overall, I'm very optimistic. And also, you've got to put it in context, Chris. You know, look at countries like Sub-Saharan Africa, where I come from. The healthcare system there is in terrible shape compared to ours. So we must be grateful for what we have.
Well, and I think that you have a way of being able to see how healthcare has been delivered in a lot of different contexts. So I really appreciate your comments there. So just to give some context for everyone else is that I got to know you as you were the ICC coordinator, which is the Integrated Community Clerkship. And so I think a small cohort of us during third year getting a chance to be in our distributed sites, but then also coming together regularly. From your time as ICC coordinator, I wanted to ask, what would be your favorite memory?
Well, obviously, the favorite moments was when I was with the students. I mean, starting with orientation week, which was a real blast. I mean, it was a lot of fun, there's a lot of, you know, jokes and whatever. And I was so welcomed by the students. Even though there's a huge generational gap there, I felt part of the small community. And that was the building block for what we did in the subsequent year. And then there was the fire that was up in, I forget where it was, that big fire. Because the problem, I had actually visited that community that morning, and the fire started that afternoon. So the students then immediately say, Hamilton started the fire. And then I remember the very first one we had was in Westlock, I think. The very first year we had it, we went to the hotel in Westlock. We had a wonderful time, except half the students got sick with salmonella poisoning. I don't know if you knew that. Got salmonella food poisoning. I didn't get sick, and everybody was very suspicious again. How come Hamilton get sick and all the students are barfing and in the washroom? and that was quite a serious outbreak. One of our poor students wasn't allowed to have any patient contact for about 6 weeks until he was stool culture negative for salmonella. So those were all very memorable moments. But then, of course, the individual visits. I think it was so much fun going to the town, walking around, seeing the patients with the students, having a chat, maybe going for lunch, occasionally going for dinner. I really, really enjoyed that. It was one of the greatest jobs I've had in the medical school.
That's great. As the students, we could see how much you enjoy being with us. And, you know, one of the ways when I take on learners now is I always frame our time when we begin that they are my junior colleagues, I'm their senior colleague. And so we're working together because ultimately we are working together. And so one of the questions I have for you is, what advice do you have for your junior colleagues who are early in their career?
Well, the first thing would go into what you just said, and I would encourage you all to engage medical students and residents in your practice. It keeps you young. It's very engaging. It's a lot of fun. It may take a little bit more time out of your day, but it's very rewarding. And when you get older like me, you may actually need their skill set to help you when you get sick later on in life. And not only that, there's evidence to show that doctors that actually have students and residents in practice actually are more likely to be practicing evidence-based medicine. You know, it was wonderful when I would be challenged by a resident or a student or I'd learn something new, and hopefully I was humble enough to admit that I didn't know it, and actually then they broadened my horizons. And when we switched to Connect Care, I tell you, they saved my life. I mean, I have medical students and residents running around with me playing with a computer, and that was awesome. At the same time, talking about computers, I think you have to be a little bit cautious here because I think what's happening now is that there's now two patients. There's a patient that's in the bed and there's the patients in the computer. Mm. And I ask you, which patient is in your head? And I think that there's too many of us, especially younger physicians, are spending too much time in front of the computer and not enough time engaging the patients. And even the nurses go in the wards now. I see these nurses all by the wall typing in information. Engage your patient. That's what they look forward to when you walk into the ward. It's very important to them. And also it makes your practice more rewarding. Other quick ones would be, you know, the pen is deadlier than the sword. You remember this one?
Right.
You're apt to write prescriptions that could kill people. Sometimes the safest prescription is no prescription. And if you're choosing a drug, choose the safest drug. And how long are you going to use that drug? And you regularly go to a resource like this to actually update your knowledge. I think patients would be horrified to find out how little we know about a drug when you write down that prescription. Having worked on general medicine, and I'm sure you've seen this, significant numbers of patients get admitted because of complications from medication. So beware of things prescribed. If you're a surgeon or do surgical procedures, remember, first thing you teach a surgeon to do is how to cut. Then you teach them when to cut. And then finally, you teach them when not to cut. And sometimes the best operation is no operation. So remember that. Takes a lot of skill for a surgeon to decide in this case surgery is not the way to go because of this risk or the complications, etc. And then I would say imagination. I've always said imagination is the essence of empathy. And I loved my job. I loved medicine. I had no problem going into the hospital seeing patients. You know, and if you're feeling a bit down, you're a bit exhausted, imagine what it is to be another. Imagine what it is to be a refugee. Imagine what it is to be a pregnant woman in an emergency room with vaginal bleeding. I mean, that is very, you know, you could empathize with those people and with the patient if you reflect on it. Don't be judgmental on drug-addicted individuals. Think about what their life might have been that led to that. So use your imagination to focus your empathy with your patient.
Those are such great thoughts. And I think, again, just being so focused on the patients or being mindful for the patients and how we can care for them. And so the last question I have for you, Dr. Hamilton, is what would you tell your younger version of yourself from 10 years ago?
First of all, I would say spend more time with your children. I've got three amazing young adults, and my wife did the bulk of the bringing up. She's been a wonderful mother and a wonderful wife. But I probably spend way too much time in the hospital on call and whatever. So there's not a competition. It's not like the life balance. You know, you embrace your career. It's wonderful, very rewarding. In many ways, my family benefited from me being a physician. But I would say reflect on the fact, especially your children who grow up so rapidly, remember that. And then also reflect on your spouse, because being the wife or a husband of a physician can be very, very challenging. And you need to reflect on your impact that you might be having on them and on your children. Then I would recommend that if you do settle down and you buy a house or something, I'd recommend you buy it. This is a practical advice. Make it walking distance to your job. And I really regret that, because getting in a car at 6 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning and driving all the way to the hospital can be a pain. If you can just pop out the front door, go home for lunch, you know, go back in the evening, I would highly recommend that if you can afford it, buy a home walking distance to work. And finally, I would recommend a diary. I recommend a diary in regular life for your own personal, you know, reflection. But I also think you should start a medical diary. I really wish I had done this. I've seen so many amazing cases, had an amazing career, ups and downs. I would recommend you have a medical diary. Just don't put anything confidential in there. Don't mention names. Don't mention hospital numbers. But you could reflect. I saw an interesting case of a patient with irritable bowel disease that turned out to something else. And then you can reflect on that. And also on your own practice. If you're very worried about a patient, well, you can write it down, your own thoughts, and then go back and reflect on it. And really, you'll realize, in fact, that your anxiety probably was not that well-founded in the first place. So I would recommend those three things. Spend more time with your children. Live close to work. And then have a diary of your medical practice.
Well, Dr. Hamilton, thank you so much for sharing these pearls of wisdom. And I think, you know, as you have seen so many things and worked with a lot of people, I think it just comes from a place of experience. Also, that I know comes from your heart and the way that you care for the people around you. And I'm happy that you have arrived to retirement and that you get to be able to savor it now with your family. And so, thank you again for your contribution to medical education and for participating in our interview series here.
Well, thank you, Chris. I'm very privileged to have done this, and all the best to the students, but very important for you all to believe in yourselves. And thank you for your contributions to our community. All the best, Chris.